First of all, thank you for coming on the show. And you know, before I even finished the sentence, like, hey, I have a podcast. You're like, yes.
Yeah. I mean,
podcast whore.
Yeah.
That. But I mean, more importantly, Travis in particular, and, you know, Kalispell in Montana in general, so generous to me every year. So anything I can do to pay it back.
Yeah. No, it's actually Denver was the one that brought up the idea. You know, I'm still in this, like, I've recorded about 50 episodes and I'm just starting to kind of get my balance on, okay, this is something I really want to do and go full bore into, like I've done with training or gyms or things like that, you know, as a business. And it's something I really enjoy. I started it when I was working in a corporate job and I needed a creative outlet, you know, in the podcast. I'd been listening to Andy's podcast and Joe Rogan's and everything else too. And it's actually kind of funny. That's actually how I found out about Travis and Keith's gym. I've known about SPG, the organization, for a long time, but that's how I found out about the Kalispell one, was Andy's podcast. And starting the podcast was something to get back into doing something creative and entrepreneurial, you know. And
Andy has a podcast?
Yeah, it's a small one, you know, it's not too bad. Huh.
I just thought it was a guy who trained at the gym.
Talks a lot of shit. He actually came into, I was doing a one-on-one with Denver and Daniel in Whitefish, and he came in and about like halfway through, he just walks in, he's taping up his fingers. I swear it was like a scene out of like an 80s movie. Like the bully walks in, he goes, nothing you do right now is going to help you later on. And Daniel goes, what was that like humble, like ego thing you talk about on your podcast all the time?
Yeah, that's just on the podcast.
Right. So, well, I wanted to have you on because my podcast, I really focus on, the mindset of like entrepreneurship and not going down that normal beaten path in life. And obviously that's not what you've done. And that's definitely not what you've done. I don't think any of us here have done that. You know, maybe we've kind of veered into it for a little while, but like, there's always that pull to get away from that, like that construct of like the 9-to-5 job and the corporate environment and, you know, work in the same place for 35 years. Then you get that watch and you retire and, like, what do you remember or what do you feel like you actually made an impact on society or anything else in life, right? Besides your family. And even your family, if you're doing that type of work, you never see your family.
Right. So I'm a little bit different. I mean, it's funny. Most of my friends and both of my brothers are true entrepreneurs, small business owners, medium to small business.
Right.
And I work for a university, which is more like a corporation, not quite as evil, but still super bureaucratic.
Right.
And I didn't get a watch, but you know, at 10 years, they give you a little gold bar and gold coin. And there's some overlap, but it's certainly not 9-to-5. And it certainly is far from home and far from what everyone, including myself, probably thought I would be doing, you know, 20 years ago.
Right. So what took you originally to Korea? I mean, was it work specifically?
Student. No, so like I went first as an undergrad. I was going to do a year abroad in 88. And my father, in one of the two or three pieces of good advice he gave me in my entire life, said, a year's a long time. Maybe you should go for a summer. So I actually took his advice, saved a bunch of money, and I went for the summer before the year. And I was there like 7 weeks, maybe. I liked it. And so I came back, did another year of college and went for a full year. But first I was an undergrad, doing like a year abroad.
Yeah. So how did you guys meet originally?
We met through SBG. I don't know if John remembers specifically when we met. Yeah. I very clearly do. We were actually at a camp. Camps were way different back then.
Right.
All the camps were at the MLK gym. So the original, well, not the original, but the second location that Matt ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And John came in for the seminar. I remember back then his thing was this this passing style where he was constantly grabbing the belt in the back of the pants and kind of hoisting you up on your shoulders, kind of a version of the double underpass, I would say. I was a purple belt at the time.
Yeah.
And he was a black belt. So, but, you know, then it's different now, but then it's like anytime you got a chance to roll with a black belt or meet a black belt, it was like a really big deal.
Is this like 15, 20 years ago, somewhere there?
Oh, gosh.
2003, 2004.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Went back in 2003.
Yeah, so that 16 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's still that heavy kind of Brazilian influence of like the white belt doesn't roll with the black belt type of thing.
No. Not like that at all, because our organization's always been ahead of the curve when it comes to that.
A bit more democratic.
Right. You know, because Chris Howder, like, you know.
Anarchist.
Yeah. I mean, he would roll with us, you know. And, but at the time, you know, I started jiu-jitsu, Matt was a purple belt.
Right.
Right. So the only time I ever, you know, would see a black belt is when Chris Howder would come in and teach.
Oh, gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah.
But no, I met Frankel there. I remember rolling with him and watching him roll in our old, professional wrestling boxing ring. And, it was, he was no gi. He had like, board shorts on. I remember it pretty distinctly, but, that's when we met. And then I think when there were two times when we actually really kind of hit it off, I mm-hmm. think. One of them was in Niagara Falls at another camp.
Yep.
And I rolled with him. And now at this point, I think I was a black belt.
Right.
And my wife, she came up to me afterwards and she's like, "Man, you're really sweating a lot and breathing hard." She's like, "It doesn't look like John's even tired." And I was like, "You bitch." Like I'm thinking to myself, like, I just tried my hardest, which is why I'm sweating and breathing so hard. And I obviously, jiu-jitsu doesn't lie. So like you roll with somebody.
Sure.
And whether they let you get them and you catch them in something or whatever, mm-hmm. when the roll's over, like you don't walk away from it and go like, "Ah,
I won.
I got him." You walk away from it and you know, like you're like, "Damn it."
Yeah.
Right. So I already felt that. And then, so for her to look at me and tell me that, I was like, "Yeah, okay, I get it."
Yeah.
You know, I get it. And then, subsequent to that, we had the very first camp in Kalispell. And that was when I was really, cause that experience in Niagara Falls mm-hmm. kind of stuck with me. And so then, we were sitting at the VFW in Kalispell, and I was talking with John. I was like, "Man, I really want to be able to roll like that. Like, I really sincerely want to be able to roll like that." Mm-hmm. But I'm a very competitive person,
right?
And I just haven't figured out, like, how do I do the thing that I know I'm supposed to do? Like, how do I actually let go of that love of winning?
Yeah.
In favor of the love of jiu-jitsu, like how I like, and I was honest, but you know, sometimes you see a trait or a quality mm-hmm. that you want to exhibit in your own life, but you truly just don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
And so that was really, for me personally, that was kind of what spurned, our relationship. And then ever since then, it's like, I tell people all the time, I'm like, "Man, John's my favorite instructor," like, mm-hmm. you know, and I bring him up every summer. And it's always it's not for a weekend.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, he teaches all my classes.
Yep.
That's not because I don't like to teach. I love teaching.
Right.
It's because I also love being a student.
Yeah.
You know, like today I was working with, you know, my partner in Whitefish, Daniel, another mm-hmm. black belt.
Yep.
And we're both sitting there going, "Man, there's a lot of really good details on hip bump sweeps."
Yeah.
And the two times before this, triangle's my thing. Like, that's my finish. I finished more tournaments with triangles than anything mm-hmm. else. And I remember a couple years ago, John came up and showed a couple details on the triangle. I was like, "Man, that was the one technique mm-hmm. I thought I had locked up." And, you know, and John and I actually were talking in the locker room today after class. And I'm like, I feel really sorry for people who come to a class and they're like, "Oh, hip pump sweep. I know that. Like, that box has already been checked. Like, I know how to do a hip pump sweep." And I'm like, "You have no idea."
Yeah.
Like, you have no idea. And when you come to a class like that with that mindset of like, "Well, I already know that."
Yeah.
Or, "I do it this way," or whatever it is, it's so hard to be a student. But when John comes up, he never teaches necessarily anything where I'm just like, "Oh, I've never seen that before."
Right.
It's always something I've seen, but it's a little bit better and makes what I thought I already knew better than it already was.
Yeah.
So, and then of course, you know, take the jiu-jitsu part of it out. it just so happens that we both have a huge love of, you know, Americana and good music, you know, like real country music.
Yeah, I see the stuff you'll post. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and and boots and hats. Yeah. And so, yeah, it just it worked out that way. And that's actually probably the most beautiful thing for me about jiu-jitsu, but specifically SBG.
Right.
Because let's be honest, like there is a difference, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it's the relationships. And so I try to tell people, I'm like, man, like you're coming here to learn how to fight, which you will. You can do that in a lot of gyms. A lot of schools teach jiu-jitsu, and if they're teaching real jiu-jitsu, you'll know how to fight when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
What I can't promise you is that you will create lifelong relationships that will bleed out into the rest of your life.
Right.
And for me, that's the most valuable thing that's come out of jiu-jitsu and SBG specifically. But my relationship with John, I mean, we have a pretty strong bond. And you know, we might see each other once a year, but we're communicating and stuff. And when we do see each other, I get a lot of good information that goes outside of the mat.
Right.
But anyway, that's a long-winded answer for how we met. But
yeah,
I think that's.
Did I forget anything, John?
No, and I mean, I feel the same way. It can be living in Korea is wonderful, and there are a lot of advantages. I mean, I'm there voluntarily, and I'm there because I like it. But you know, there's a lot of things I miss as well, obviously, about America. And
how long you live there again for?
I haven't
on a full-time basis
looked at my passport, but probably on the ground 22 years of the last 35, 36 years.
That's right. I remember I asked you that when we at that barbecue.
Yeah. It's over 20 now.
Yeah.
Right on the ground. So, and you know, first as a student and then as now as a professor. But you know, I miss what I consider America.
Yeah.
You know, and that's changing too. But, you know, on a large scale, for me right now, it's Montana and Texas.
Right.
And then on a small scale, it's human beings. It's Travis Davis and a few other people where it's like, yeah, that's what I miss. You know, there's a lot not to miss too.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And there's a lot of times when I feel blessed to have the physical and aesthetic distance from some of the madness.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool. And these guys, have created and maintained a space that I can kind of pop into and be welcome because it's a lot of work to create it, and it's more work. I mean, everyone can buy a fast car or a fast boat, but it's like, can you afford to keep it for 20 years? You know, that's different too, right?
You can buy the car, right. But like, can you afford the maintenance?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so they've not only like bought it, but they maintain it, and I can pop in once or twice a year and you know, be welcomed and try to contribute a little bit. So, you know, it's a blessing for me. It's and my wife and my daughter as well. It just allows me and us to kind of be spoiled and have the best of both worlds. Yeah.
Yeah. We were actually talking about that the last time he was on the podcast about how uncomfortable you were talking about like getting this kind of the credit in that. And I guess recognition accolades of like building up the community. And you were really, you know, adamant about making sure that like, the attention was not on you and Kisa. It was about like, this doesn't happen without all the people that decided to come here and train and not just train, but actually get involved within the community itself and come to the get togethers and hang out afterwards and do all the things that like a community does. Right. But I think what you said is really important, you know, so we came here and signed up and prepaid for the whole family before we even had a house, because for myself, I knew, for my family, moving again states with kids, and you know this, right? Five kids under 13 years old. We're moving two states away. This is our second, you know, move in 5 years after we moved from California. And I knew that if we just move somewhere and say, like, hey, this is going to be great. We're going to Montana. And like the idea of Montana is awesome, right? But then I didn't do anything as a father, you know, leader of the family to get them embedded in something that's going to provide them with friendships, community, growth, hardship, right? Doing something difficult. And then gives them some consistency to where, especially coming out of Washington with that whole pandemic and lockdown and where everything was like this isolation, right? So that's why it was so important for me to kind of get them here and jump into it. And this is where like the benefit of podcasts come into play. I felt like I got a little bit of taste of who Travis and Kisa were through podcasts, Randy's podcast, and through, and then starting to follow on social media and go like, okay, this is what I'm looking for my family.
Yeah. You know? Well, I'll say two things popped into my head. One, and we were just talking about this with a couple of very nice strangers in Kalispell.
Mm-hmm.
You got lucky in a sense that Travis and Kisa are actually who they are on the podcast.
Yes.
Because I mean, it's pretty easy. Oh, camera's on, mic's on, I'm going to act.
Yes.
I don't do that. He doesn't do that. You don't do that. But a lot of people do that.
Sure.
The average person does that. And I'm not saying they're deceitful or willfully being deceptive,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, oh, camera.
There's like a little human nature in there.
Best self forward. And then you meet him and you're like, oh, that's not really you. But
yeah,
you got lucky in that sense because I mean, we were talking about some other famous podcasters who are like that. And it's refreshing.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you meet someone. And it's like pulling back the curtain and seeing the Wizard of Oz, the skinny old man pulling levers, not really who you thought he or she was. And then the other thing about Travis and Kisa being a little bit reluctant to take credit, because I think, you know, people are who listen to you, it's like, you know, it's family, it's philosophy, it's you know, a lot of things like independence and entrepreneurship. The very, very best advice I got regarding that was the day I got into graduate school. I was in Korea for the summer, living with a guy who was, you know, kind of a mentor, older. He had already done his PhD and had worked for quite a while for the U.S. government, all kinds of secret stuff. And he just looked at me and he's like, "Congratulations! Don't ever tell anyone what you just told me." And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean? It's not a secret." And he's like, "Oh, no, it's not a secret." And he's like, "If you ever do anything in your life that's important, other people will be talking about it. And if it's not important and you're talking about it, you're an asshole." So like either way, you don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Roger that." Like I trusted that guy and it's been right. And it's a yardstick because when I'm sitting around and someone's like, "You know, I did this and I did that and I won this and I won that." I'm like, "I don't know what you did and I don't know what you won, but if it's like, I know the names of people who have won world championships without them telling me."
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
If it's important. Or who wrote a New York Times bestselling book or who made $1 trillion. But if you're the one saying it, it's kind of automatically devalued.
Right.
Yeah.
So on that note, when did you notice that there was value in what you do, like the wizardry of like John Frankel,
No, but that's so compartmental.
Right.
Like, value to me, value to my wife, value to my daughter, value to my jiu-jitsu students.
Sure.
In the
jiu-jitsu world.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, to where it was like, oh, like I can actually, and I'm not asking this as far as like, oh, I can get rich doing seminars. What I mean as far as, oh, this is something that might be in demand. Like I can actually do this and I'm not going to be just shelling out money out of my own pocket to do this right?
Yeah. And by the way, in the beginning, and for everyone who thinks they're going to get rich doing jiu-jitsu, quit now.
Or running a gym.
I tell my students when they're like, "I don't have any money and I don't have any time." Like I came back from Korea. I'd finished my MA. Mm-hmm. I was in Santa Cruz for 2 weeks and I'd already planned to move to LA because there was no jiu-jitsu in Santa Cruz. There is now, of course.
Yeah.
It was LA and Hawaii at that time. Horian and his couple of his brothers were in LA in the Machados and Hicks, Helson was in Hawaii. So I'm going to LA, going to train with Hickson. And Hickson, and this is 1994-5. He was $200 a month for unlimited.
Yeah.
And just, you couldn't even start in group classes. You had to start in privates, which were $40 a half hour. And so it was $160 a month to train 1 half hour a week until your instructor, and I had Luis, who's now, he's awesome. He's black belt in Maui, but he was brown belt at the time. And he had to, whether it was 10 lessons or 100 lessons, there was no guarantee. It's like, okay, now you're not a spaz. You're not going to hurt. It's like foundations.
I was just going to say, it's like their version of foundations.
But you had to do privates.
Yes.
Hickson was so overwhelmed and so popular.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'll do it. And I didn't have any money. I was renting a room in a 3-bedroom apartment. I was kind of living on rice and beans and mm-hmm. ramen and stuff to scrape together money to train 160. And I don't know what that is now. That's in today's money, maybe 500 a month.
Right.
And, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it was,
you're talking 94.
And for me, it was a lot of money. I wasn't a doctor. I wasn't mm-hmm. a lawyer. And then when I was like approved to go into group class, it was $200 a month if I wanted to train unlimited, which I did. And that was like $600 a month. But it was like, I wanted to do it. And yeah. I asked Luis, and this is important for like gym owners, if any gym owners are listening, because I know Travis already knows about it.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I'm a graduate student. I don't have money. I'll work so hard. You know, and I had done a lot of martial arts. I already had black belts and other martial arts. And I was like, I'll do this and all that. And he was super nice.
Yes.
And he's like, I really want you to do jiu-jitsu. You're good. Like, he had done some things with me. He's like, I think you have talent for jiu-jitsu. And he's like, but like, this is jiu-jitsu and it's Hicks and Grace jiu-jitsu. And like, it's $200 a month.
Yeah.
So you will find a way if it's valuable to you, or you'll quit. And,
right.
And it was like tough love. And I found a way. But then, you know, 20 years later, I'm making money.
Yes.
But I didn't start out to make money. Sure. I started out like just,
yeah,
you know, money I didn't barely have.
Yeah, you're investing in yourself. Yeah.
And so, you know, that's, I forget how I got on this tangent, what the question was about. Like, when did I discover?
Like,
so,
there's some value yeah. in so it. Like, it, you have value.
Right. But what yeah. I'm saying is, you know, it's like when you run a company and you're not paying yourself, but you're like reinvesting for the uh-huh. first decade. And then 20 years later, it's like, must be nice to have like that car. And you're like, yeah, it must have been nice when I, you know, had my whole family in a studio apartment and
right.
I reinvested all my money back into my business.
20-year overnight success.
That yes, kind of thing.
Exactly.
So like,
it's yeah, what Rob said. Yeah.
Right. So I've been jiu-jitsu 27 years this summer. Mm-hmm. Like right now it's 27 years. And, you know, I probably, luckily due to SBG and a few other people, you know, maybe started making a little traveling money, not like retirement
sure.
money or anything, you know, in the last 7 years or so.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
like, you know, it's a long haul.
Yeah, definitely. It's it's really interesting, the whole like, you know, 15-year overnight success, you know, that mm-hmm. that statement. It's so important. It's like I try to teach it to my kids right now. Right. And I know they're not going to get it right away. But getting to the, going back to what you were saying about like, oh, hip bump sweeps. And then you see people just sometimes go like, oh, I already know this. Right. It's funny you said that. My 8-year-old twins were talking about judo tonight. And I was saying like, we got judo and then we're going to get done right away and come here because Coach Travis, Coach Sean are coming over for the podcast. And one of my twins was like, oh, I don't know if I want to go to judo. I was like, what are you talking about? You said you're the one who decided to sign up for it. Like, yeah, but like all we do is practice throws. I said, yes, that's what judo is. And I told you that when I told you, do you want to pick MMA? And you knew what MMA was. We've watched MMA. You saw like, or judo, and you want to do judo. And she goes like, well, like, you know, I said, are you perfect at it? She goes, what do you mean? I said, well, you learn how to write in cursive. She goes, yeah. I said, did you stop writing once you learned? She goes, no. I said, exactly. You know, you keep doing it because there's a use for it and you refine it and you get better and better at it. You know, so I was trying to put that lesson in there as far as like, you don't just learn it and they're like, okay, now I'm done with this. And then you put it away.
You know, I so, talk about this yeah. with seminars all the time. Like, first of all, in the weight room.
Yes.
When you hit a certain level, like mm-hmm. you and your wife, it's like, if you find something once a year that mm-hmm. gives you 5 pounds.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Oh,
like
definitely.
In the beginning, it's like, throw on another plate.
Novice effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you've been doing it for 20-something years, it's yeah. like, If Henry or Travis was showing a little Kimura detail today, or Henry shows me like a better way on a cross collar choke, like
right.
it makes my technique 2% better. That's after 27 years, 2% increase is like the equivalent of like a 50% increase if I were right. a white belt, you know? Mm-hmm.
What, and then the time investment you were talking about earlier too, as well, is like such a huge thing. And I'm not saying this to, you know, basically like talk down to anybody who doesn't go to class 4 days a week, you know? So for a lot of people who don't know, Travis teaches classes both at Kalispell, the cab class, and at Whitefish, right? So you do Wednesday and Friday, the noon class in Kalispell, and Tuesday and Thursday. And if I get it correct, what you do the same curriculum Tuesday, Wednesday, so Whitefish, Kalispell, and then Thursday, Friday, Whitefish, Kalispell is the second part of that curriculum of that week, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Right. So if you're somebody who's really interested in actually wanting to get better at this and investing time into it, and if you understand anything about learning something new, 2 days a week is decent, but in my understanding of like how to stress adaptation recovery when it comes to like training, 3 days is the minimum. 2 days out of seven, every time you come back to that first day again, the second week, the first day you're like, oh, what am I doing again? And then you do the second day. Oh, I remember that. And then you're off for four days again, right?
I agree.
Yeah. So that 3 days is really great. So because I went to Whitefish yesterday and I come in today and we're doing, again, it's part two of
what. Except it's different, right?
It was a little bit different, which was cool. But there was still some stuff we did that we did yesterday. So I just happened to get paired with two other guys, right? Because of like our size, it was three of us. But both of them didn't comb yesterday. So this was all new to them. So it was beneficial that I had already done it, that I was able to kind of, and I don't want to sit there like I coached them, but it was, you know, like I did it yesterday. So when they were doing it, they're like, wait, what are we doing here? And they're both bigger guys as well. So like that hip bump is not a natural, just kind of pop up and you can sit up, right? You know, your own body kind of gets in the way sometimes if you don't know what you're doing. So there was that benefit of like, I invested the time and energy into it. So when I came today and I got paired with two other guys, I didn't feel like I was losing anything.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not, sorry.
No, that's right.
I'm not deliberately teaching different. I think Travis is here. So it's like the macro curriculum is the same, but I know like you might be there both days. Andy might be there both days.
Right.
Like some of the really good students are coming both days. And so I'm not like, oh, I want to favor you or I want to favor Andy, but naturally there'll just be some difference. I'm watching the whole room and people are doing something well or struggling with something and it'll just go on little tangents.
Right.
So if you come both days, you're right. You're getting some redundancy, which is always good.
It's,
you
know, really good.
Repetition. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, oh, there's a new problem. And then you get something new as well. It's not as if I had a script.
Yeah.
And you like 100% script you have to Wednesday.
Stick to it. Yeah.
That would be kind of boring.
No, yeah. Yeah.
So it's really good to come both days.
And I don't know if it's the same for you. It might be different, but one thing I noticed for me personally, first of all, redundancy is key. Mm-hmm. Like repetition. I'm a slow learner.
Mm-hmm.
I have a good memory, but I'm a slow learner. And you need to rep
the grooves in, right?
I love nothing more than to hear it again.
Yep.
And hear it again and hear it again. Like that works for me.
Mm-hmm.
But as a coach and as an instructor, one thing that I will confess to, or if I go to Whitefish and let's say we're working closed guard, like we are on this current 2 week cycle.
Yeah.
And I teach in Whitefish, while I'm teaching, I will recognize like, oh, should have changed the order there slightly, or oops, somebody asked a question. I was like, oh, I forgot to say that. And so then I come and teach again on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And my point in saying all this about redundancy is, look, as a student, I love it. As a coach, I love it. Because what it does is by being able to teach again the next day, I can fix what I would have done different the first day.
Right.
So for me, I love that. Teaching first time Tuesday, fixing it Wednesday, teaching it the first time Thursday, fixing it Friday.
Yeah.
And then on a macro scale, when I come back around to close guard again, it's like, okay, I fixed it last time. So now that Tuesday's better, it's more like the Wednesday. And then the Wednesday, it's like, okay, but I still could have made it better.
Yeah.
And then it just gets better and better and better. And that's what happens when you're a good student. You come into a class and you're like, oh, sweet, we're doing Oompa escapes today.
Yep.
Because mine's not perfect.
Right.
Like, here's another opportunity to pick up a piece that I missed last time.
Yeah. My day job is literature, right? So this is exactly what Travis is saying. I think that Nabokov once said, like, you only read a novel the second time. Because the first time, it's like you're so busy. The names, is that a husband or a boyfriend?
Yeah.
Are they cousins or brothers? Did he kill her or did she kill? You know, it's like
Chapter 14, you're like, wait, who's that person?
The plot is like, you're just trying to figure out the skeleton of the plot and stuff. And that's like when you see Oompa the first time, you're like, okay, my hand goes here. But then like the second time and the third time and the fourth time, it's like, okay, I understand how these things are related. Let me go a little deeper.
Yeah.
Now I read this novel and it's like, oh, that was there. I read the same novel, but it's like, oh, that was there. I'll watch videos, like instructional videos of like good jujitsu guys that I'll put away for like a decade. And I'll think, like, yeah, that's like an old school, not very much to watch there. And I'll turn it on, not that often because I don't watch that many videos, but I'll turn it on and I'll be like, whoa, because I have the eyes to see it. Like, yes, it went over my head.
So true.
Before, you know?
So true. So
yeah, you don't know what you're looking at.
If you revisit it 17 times, you get 17 new details. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I coach MMA too.
Right.
And I've cornered, I don't know how many hundreds of fights. And actually, that's how I got into jiu-jitsu in the first place. But it's so weird too, because the same's true of that. Like, I'll go back and watch a fight that I've seen, maybe not hundreds of times, but there are some fights that I've watched a lot of times. And they're like, now I see what happened there.
Yeah.
Right.
That makes total sense, because I've always had an affinity for MMA. I've watched it since, but you know, it hit even before it really hit mainstream, like early 2000s. And part of it was because I got introduced into that world to an extent by getting into, like, of all things, nightclub security in the Bay Area when I was 18 years old, right? And this is 97, 98. And then not too long after that, I heard the word jiu-jitsu. You know, like, I'd understand grappling and then UFC and all that. But it's funny because even at that point, watching it, having an understanding for it, I coached football, I coached soccer, being a personal trainer, I understand form, technique, and all those things as well. So it's not just like, you know, like, let's use a sports analogy. It's not like, you know, every play is not the 80-yard Hail Mary touchdown, right? Okay, so there's nuance in the 18 moves of this block to get that 3-yard run, like in football, right? But even then, having done jiu-jitsu now for 7 months, which is nothing, right? Like, in the lifetime of...
It's seven months more than most people.
But this is what I'm saying. So, like, having done it now for 7 months in an actual, like, organized curriculum, coming and training on a program, I'll watch a fight now. And before I knew, like, okay, he's trying for something here. He's holding here. Like, he's pulling guard. Like, I understood some basics of jiu-jitsu, right? But I watch fights now, like, every Saturday. And it opens up this whole world of, like, what I'm actually looking at now. And what you see what they're actually trying to do. And then it's funny, especially because I'll watch fights with, like, the guys, you know, from class. And I was like, oh, this is what Travis was talking about the other day. Or, oh, you know, this is, you know, like, he's trying to...
I'll do it on purpose. Like, sometimes I'll actually pick a fight because I know people can relate to that.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, hey, go back and watch the Pettis fight where he simple sweeps him and watch where his foot goes.
Oh, I thought you meant you went out and picked fights to test the techniques.
Probably that too.
I gave that up.
Last week?
A year ago.
Okay.
No. No, all kidding aside. It works. Like, I mean, it's tested. It's been tested by more people than me. But... I think there is a lot of value in that, though, where you can teach something in class, and then say, go back, like, okay, so at your you were teaching guard passing one for my classes, because it was I think it was the last curriculum we did
right.
in CAP was guard passing, and it was so funny because John was teaching guard passing and. You would end up in, I can't remember what BJ Penn calls it, but
a dope mount.
Yeah, dope mount. And I remember watching, because BJ was my favorite fighter.
Right.
He was my.
You liked him because he was an American who kicked everyone's ass.
And in his prime.
Similar build.
He was the first American to dominate in Brazil.
Right.
Yeah. It's the first non Brazilian black belt to win a world championship.
Oh, that's right.
But no, I mean, like, I remember, like, the Matt Hughes fight. Like, I remember all those fights. That was when I was really into the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how he kept getting mount. Like, I had no idea. And then, like, what John was teaching, like, part of what he was teaching is exactly what BJ Penn does to get to mount.
Right.
Like, he passes that position and you feel like you kind of have a guard of some mm-hmm. sort. Like, it's not a normal
then it
guard.
Disappears.
But exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's useful because then when you... It puts it in context,
yeah.
Right, so where you can go watch it, because I didn't find Matt and SBG, and neither did my brother. It was actually one of our coworkers, because we were all into it, and it was the fight with Royce Gracie and Dan Severin that actually got me interested in jiu-jitsu. Period.
Right,
because I used to watch on VHS, and I still remember, like, he's fighting this big dude, black speedo, mustache, and he's getting smashed from my perspective.
Right.
And Severn had almost broke other people's. Remember, he suplexed that kickboxer and almost broke his neck, the grasshopper.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was a crusher.
Right.
Yeah. And even Jim Brown at the time, who was the announcer,
thought he was losing. Right.
Even when they stopped the fight,
because he had no idea like what he's looking at. Yeah.
Neither did I.
Right.
Neither did I. Like, I had no idea what a triangle choke is.
Yep.
Like, if you don't know what a triangle choke is, I think still today, like, the average person, if you show them that fight,
sure,
they're going to say the same thing as Jim Brown. Like, oh, he won.
Right. Because like, he was standing, that guy's on his neck.
And Hoist's knees were, like, bent into his face. And
right.
Oh, yeah. Hoist tapped.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I think that's helpful. And then one other thing I was thinking about, and I don't know if it was your analogy or Matt's, but somebody used like the analogy of like looking through a keyhole
into a room. I was just going to say it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so true. And especially like where you're at with jiu-jitsu right now, like 7 months in the beginning, you're seeing like this, you're basically whatever you get taught today.
Yeah.
Like that's what you're
saying.
Like that's your understanding of jiu-jitsu. And I think is that not even the keyhole gets bigger, but like you open the door. And now you're in the room.
Right.
It's like all of a sudden it's like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, and it's something to look forward to because that's what I felt like today. And that's what I felt like for the last 10 years. And Matt talks about this too. Like you don't really start learning jiu-jitsu until you're a black belt.
Yeah.
Yeah. You hear people say it all the time and you're like, oh yeah, that whatever, you know, but I really believe that's true. Like I've learned more in the last 5 years than I did in the first 22.
Yeah.
I can believe that just from if I compare it to things that I've spent years on, both from playing and then coaching, like with football and then with training, like having been trained and then like being a trainer for 15 years, like as far as like you get to a certain thing where you recognize different aspects of things and then you go work with somebody else and they point something out that you didn't see or, oh, that transition or that movement or like, you know, if you put your feet here or if you do these like little like you were talking about earlier, micro and macro, right? You get those differences. What I love about it is as somebody who's got a background in fitness and then a couple of these different sports going into, and then like having this peripheral, I was talking to Travis before, this like peripheral understanding and a little bit of sprinkling, like with like Sam Brodesky, you know what I mean? And the guys down there in Santa Cruz where they introduced aspects of grappling, jiu-jitsu, like Muay Thai, like that kind of stuff to me. And I was able to like on the layman person who's drunk at a bar, like no problem, just snap that into place. It's easy. But then I remember coming to class the first day, and that was the first time, like my wife would always joke about this, going like you understand you're a big guy? And I'm like, no, I'm not. But I always worked with these ogres that were 6'5", 330 pounds. I played football with guys who were way bigger than me. And then I come into class, I go, oh, I'm the bigger guy. Okay. So immediately I was like, okay, I've heard about this before. I do not want to be the white belt, 280-pound spaz that just like smashes people just because I'm bigger and I'm stronger. So immediately I was like, okay, I'm going to bring everything down to a one. And I'm going to make sure like I go as slow as possible and I really understand the grooves of like how everything works. Like, and you know, and I knew that this isn't lifting. Like I can lift by myself and get better just with some cues and tips from a coach. I don't care how many videos you watch and how many times you practice by yourself on a dummy. You don't get better at jiu-jitsu without partners. You have to have partners. And if you are that person that's going to hurt people or spaz out and people don't want to roll with you and they avoid you, it's really detrimental to yourself. Yeah.
And I think we talked about that the first time I was on.
Yes.
But, and I say this all the time, and because I mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't just true of jiu-jitsu. I think this is a life lesson.
Right.
If you want to get good at jiu-jitsu, make everyone around you better.
Right.
And if you do that in life, it's the same thing. Yeah. You know, if you wake up every day and you think to yourself, how can I make Travis Davison better?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can I make my life better? You're probably gonna hit a ceiling.
Yeah.
But if you wake up every day and you're like, you know what my goal is today, everybody who I interact with, everybody that I come in contact with, I want to make their life better. Your life is going to get way better way quicker. And in jiu-jitsu, here's the thing, like open mat, you know, every class you come to, because you're in cap now, is followed with an hour of rolling.
I love it, so much fun.
If people don't get anything out of rolling with you, why on earth would they waste one of their rounds with you?
Yeah.
Like if I look over and I see somebody like Jimmy, mm-hmm. or Ari,
yeah.
or John's on the mat,
yeah.
or even Andy, mm-hmm. right? He's a tough training partner, but here's the thing. Like today, he knows my shoulders hurt or whatever. He's like, hey, do you want to do some positional stuff?
Yes.
Those people are going to have a line of people that want to train with
yes.
him. Like, man, I love rolling with that guy.
Yeah.
And you're going to get more roles.
Yeah.
And you're going to get better quicker because of it. But if you're in it for yourself, mm-hmm. and I don't care if it's business or relationships or you name it, but if it's all about you.
Right.
It's going to be a lot harder. It's going to be a lot harder because look, most of the three of us, I'm guessing, I know it's true for me, but I'm guessing it's probably true for you guys as well, is a lot of what we have and a lot of the opportunities that we've taken advantage of that is us.
Yeah.
But those opportunities are there because of something outside of us. Somebody else mm-hmm. was like, you know what? That Alex guy's pretty cool. He's been very generous with me and he's always offering help or whatever. And it's like, I know he needs this or he's into that. And it's like, hey, Alex, you interested in this? And it's like, yeah, that's an awesome opportunity. I didn't, right. you know,
yeah.
And jiu-jitsu is the same way.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same. And you're doing it the right way because, and I told you this on the podcast mm-hmm. too. I was always like one of the smallest guys.
Yeah.
Like I'm like 5'7" and a half. Don't tell Kisa. Like I told her when we started dating, I was 5'8" and a half.
That was the deal breaker.
Yeah. No, fortunately we met on the phone.
There you go.
Thank God. I think it's easier for the women mm-hmm. and the small men in the gym mm-hmm. to get good at jiu-jitsu because they don't have any default plan. Like they have to trust jiu-jitsu.
Right.
And their technique has to be perfect for it to work. And the big, young, athletic guys, mm-hmm. like, unfortunately, for a while, and we talked yeah. about this, John, until about purple belt.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can get away with it.
You can get away with it.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Like, don't get me wrong. Like, if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, oh, I don't do jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. but I'm a big, strong guy and I wrestled and I play football.
Yeah.
And you go to a jiu-jitsu school and you're like, I smashed all the blue belts.
Good for you.
You might be able to do that. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
But I promise you, no matter how athletic you are, because we yeah. have examples of guys who used to be in the organization and stuff like that, mm-hmm. who had incredible like wrestling pedigree mm-hmm. and just freakish genetics right. and all that kind of stuff. And you'll win blue belt world championships.
Sure.
I've watched it happen. But you will get to a place eventually,
yep.
and it's usually purple belt, and you get smashed.
Yep.
And now you've invested 2 or 3 years into learning something that you haven't bothered to learn yet.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to throw it away and yeah. restart. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like.
Or quit.
That's a waste. That's actually.
Most of them quit.
Yeah. Most of them quit.
Well, I think that's actually really important because there's that. I recognized that about 2 months ago, like when I got like some fundamental between foundations and then like a couple months into cap, where like you've got these, okay, I've got these elements of things now that I've engraved into like what I do. And then there's my background with strength and then, you know, wrestling and some other stuff too. So then you can incorporate that. And then every now and then we'll do something and it's like, oh, this is in my wheelhouse. So like did a private with Daniel in Denver last week. And it was a continuation of what we did with John, a private I was doing as well. And it was all about, you know, doing, you know, single leg takedowns and whatnot. And then the way John was showing it, and then we went into it with Daniel, I said, oh, this is an open field tackle. This is like, you know, like in yeah. football, like put your head here, come at an angle, don't go head into the chest. You want to go across, like if, and you're using momentum. If they're going this way, I want to go that way. I'm going to knock them off. Kind of like what you talked about today in class. If I push back and they've got this base triangle, right. Doesn't matter how big or small, they're not going anywhere. Right. But if I come at an angle, they're just going to flop right over.
Right.
So we're going like this and it's like, okay, cool. This is right in my wheelhouse. So now I can go, okay, that's an attribute. I can use that as well. But if all I did was every time I went to rule, I'd stand up and being 80 pounds on average bigger than everybody else, I'm just going to go for a single leg, sit on top of you and choke you. Like, number one, what am I learning? I'm not learning jack. Okay. And number two, this person's never going to roll with me again. It's like, well, oh God,
three,
here comes Alex.
I got three yeah. for you.
Yes.
You are medium large in America.
Yeah.
How much you weigh like right now? Walking
right around? Now I'm 260. I was 290 when I started.
Okay. So yeah. 260 is large,
yeah.
but
yeah.
maybe you're larger. But, no, what I mean is like if
no, I hear what you're saying, but especially because the obesity
no,
side of it.
No, yeah. no, but that's not what I mean. I mean
oh, okay.
like I mean like
Americans are big.
What I mean average. Is just like have a nice 5-minute roll with Matt when he comes in July.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
you'll be like, oh, I can't pick him up. Wait.
Yeah.
Did you say have a nice 5-minute roll?
Well, nice.
Have you had one?
He had a smile on his face.
I've been rolling with Matt for 21 years.
Let me stop. Matt is nice to me because I didn't come up in Portland.
Uh-huh.
But he's not always nice to the Portland crew.
Oh, that's funny.
There's a little bit of a, like a vertical hierarchy there.
Well, pecking order.
Yeah. But what I mean is just roll with him and you'll be like, oh, he'll be like, how much are you? And you'll be like, oh, I'm 260. He'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm 265. He's like 280. But also, like, how tall are you?
Yeah. I'm just under 6'1". So yeah. Like 6'5".
He's like 6'7".
Yeah. Yeah.
So like his base is wider than yours.
Yes.
He's heavier than yours. Mm-hmm. And he's a 5th degree black belt.
Right.
So like if you go hard, it's better for him, not worse.
Yeah.
Like you're just going to fall into traps earlier. So it's no matter how you slice it, you're always going to meet someone bigger, stronger, faster.
Exactly.
And if you're like, no, because right now I'm 21 years old and I just like won this Olympic event. And it's like, okay, but like if I've been doing this for 27 years, it's like, oh, 21, you know, I'll see you when you're 48.
Yeah.
And see how you feel.
Yeah.
You know, it's always better to invest in sustainability.
The long game.
Yeah. Sustainability is everything.
Now, how do you guys apply that? Well, I know for the most part how you guys apply it, but how would you describe it to people? Because that aspect of investing, like coming 2 times a week, doing something, and then every time you show up again, it's just like, oh, the first time is starting over again, the second
time.
Two,
I think, you know, you said this earlier.
Right.
Two is adequate for maintenance of a skill you have already developed over like several years, but it's not ideal. However, one of my favorite sayings is don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two is good. Compared to on the couch with a bag of Doritos,
yeah,
two is good. Now it's not you're not going to win world championships, but that's not everyone's goal. If a person had limited time and limited energy and limited money, and he or she is like, I'm going to commit to like Tuesday, Thursday jiu-jitsu,
right?
5 million times better than being on the couch.
Yeah, then nothing at all.
But you're talking about you're coming from competitive athletics. You're talking about wanting to develop. Then I think yes, three is minimum, and probably as a white belt, three is good because you need recovery.
Sure.
I can train 7 days a week because I can train lazy.
Right.
When I was a white belt, it's like, oh, I'm like training is like a CrossFit workout.
Right.
I'm inefficient. I'm using all these muscles. I need a day off or I'm going to get hurt. I'm going to get injured. I'm going to be overtrained. So it depends where you are on your trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
But in the beginning, I would say 3 days, you're right. It's awesome. Like train, rest, train, rest, train, rest. But I wouldn't want anyone to quit like, oh, they were on the podcast and they said 2 days is bullshit, but I can only train 2 days, so I should never do jiu-jitsu. Right.
No,
that would be horrible.
No.
Well, and the truth is, too, to that point, even if you say you train 3 days a week, chances are you're making it consistently 2 days a week.
Yeah, things happen.
The reality is.
Yeah, no, that's true. I shoot for 4 to 5. Mm-hmm. I consistently get 3 to 4.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because life gets in the way, right?
Correct.
Kids lose their shit. Yeah. Wife is sick. Like, whatever happens, right?
Yeah. Well, and my personal schedule, and I'll be 47 next month.
Yeah.
I lift Monday, Tuesday, Thursday.
Right.
And I try to roll Wednesday, Friday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It's 3 days a week lifting, and it's 3 days a week jiu-jitsu.
Right.
And if I make that, that's perfect. But the reality is sometimes you don't.
Sure.
You know, and I think what John's saying is important in terms of just mindset, because my wife's way better at this than I am. Like she has a way better, like, you know, yoga brain or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I'm kind of an all or nothing guy. It's like, if I'm going to do something, I'm all in. And if I'm not going to do something, I'm all out.
That's Anna Marie in you. Yeah.
Yeah. But the problem with that mindset, especially for people like Kisa or people who aren't me or Anne Marie, is you set yourself up. For me, it's okay. Because if I say I'm getting up at 4:45 every day, I get up at 4:45 every day.
Because
that's just who I am.
Yeah.
But for other people, that constant feeling of failure. Like, I said I was going to train 3 days a week and I only train 2 days a week. I should just give up.
Yeah.
I suck, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And that's where what John's saying is just right on the money. Like good is, let me put it this way. Good is good enough.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we live in a society where it's like, well, that's good, but this is better.
Right.
And so everyone's always looking for better. And it's like, you know what? Maybe good is good enough.
Yeah, especially depending on like which aspect of your life you're looking at. And that's actually kind of where I was going with that question, which was that concept of good is good enough, but more is better. And or as far as like time invested in is more of what you're going to get out of it. Like, how much is that of that do you see translate to real life, where either you see it put into play and then where you see it not put into play? And it's you'll see people in life, and whether it's your students or whether it's people at school or just anywhere else too, and they tend to perpetually be in this place of, I don't want to call it like despair, but of like, woe is me, or, you know, to a lack of a better extent, like a victim mentality, or of like, sure, always defeatism, right?
Sure.
Right. But then if you dig a little bit at like the root cause of like where they are in their life, you find out there's a lot of that of like start, stop, you know, like all or nothing, and then I quit. And then, or never actually deciding to invest the time and energy into something, whether it's jujitsu, whether it's like a career they want to pursue, whether it's like bettering their own health and well-being, whether it's physical, mental, all the above. And, you know, for me, jujitsu kind of checks all those boxes, right? You can take that. That's what actually I love about jujitsu, because what you learn on the mat, you can take and translate into real life. And it applies in almost all aspects of your life, with kids.
You can.
If
but
you
not everyone does, right?
No, that's my point. And that was my point with it, is where you, like, I can't remember if I told you this or not. I was talking to, and I won't say names. I was talking to, I love coming to classes in the afternoon with the kids, because it gives me an opportunity to get to know other parents and network, and it gives Anna Maria a break with the kids because she homeschools them. And if you can't tell, I like to talk. So I'll strike up conversations, talk to the parents and whatnot. And almost verbatim, I think, and this is just a random ballpark figure, 75% of the parents, and there's a lot of parents in the kids' classes.
Well, there's a lot of kids.
Yes, but that's my point. There's a lot of kids. So I've met a lot of parents over the last 7 months. A lot of them, surprises me, don't actually do jiu-jitsu, don't actually take part.
Most of them don't.
Right, yeah. And I'm having a problem asking questions. I'm like, oh, do you do it? And they go, no, you know, like, or I tried it. And they go, do you? I say, yeah, me and my wife come like 3, 4, 5 days a week. They go, really? They go, where do you find the time? I'm like, well, we make time. We made it into our
schedule.
You
don't find time, you make
time. Yeah, you make time. I told them, I said, we make time with our schedule, you know.
I wish I could find time and find money.
I wish.
Yeah.
You actually have to make some things.
I wish I had more time in the day.
Yeah.
Don't we all? Like, don't we all just get 24 hours?
Yeah,
like,
we all have the same hours.
John, do you get 36?
Because 24 last I checked.
Yeah, last time I checked, I got 24 too. Yeah.
Well, I told one.
I wonder if Elon Musk gets like 48.
24.
You sure? Like, I mean, what about Bill Gates? You think he gets
24? Although he had to give his wife half.
Yeah, well, now.
Yeah. Babies. Well, that's a whole
other rabbit hole.
We'll talk about family.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Yeah. That's a good segue.
Yeah.
You hear a lot about jujitsu informing life, yes. And I deliberately interjected it. It can, but that doesn't mean it does. Like, you have to be mindful. There are so many good lessons in jujitsu, and I think like combat athletics in general.
100%.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people with gold medals who have learned none of those things, and they're just good at choking people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, It's a possibility, but it's not an inevitability that you will take
those lessons and
apply them. But when I was talking about playing the long game, whether it was like, okay, I don't have this money, but I'm going to find a way. Like, you don't find money, you make money. You don't find time, you make time.
Yeah.
So I made money to start jiu-jitsu, even though it was like literally. So it would be, I'd have to Google it, but let's say it's like $600 by today's standards. But that's even a false number because I have more money now.
Sure.
Like, if I really wanted to, $600 is a lot of money to do something for a month.
Most people's car payments are higher than that.
Yeah.
I know. But what I'm saying is, it's not a small amount of money even now.
Right.
To do a kind of recreational activity.
Mm-hmm.
However, I have a lot more money as a 54-year-old tenured professor than I had as a 20.
Right. Student, 21-year-old, 22-year-old,
5-year-old, whatever. Yeah. Jobless. Person. I wasn't homeless, but I was part-time job. And still, you know, you do it because you make the time, you make the money. And so what you were saying about family too, it's a good segue into that, because I was thinking about it. It's like, you don't accidentally do jujitsu for 3 decades. It's like you don't accidentally stay married for 3 decades.
Yes.
You know, quitting's the easiest thing in the world, and it's habit for me, you know? And so it's not, I know great friends who have had necessary endings. That's a great book, by the way, if you want to read a great book. Necessary Endings
is interesting.
Great book. But I have great friends who had necessary endings, but they're few and far between. I think most endings, like if you're talking about someone that you took the time, not like you were drunk in Vegas and you married a stripper. I mean, you actually took the time to get to know this woman. Hey,
he's talking about me.
No judgment.
But I mean, I did get married in Vegas.
But if you actually took the time to get to know a woman, and then there are a lot of women listening to your podcast. So if women did the same thing and took the time to get to know a man, and then it's like, this is less fun than it was, or this is a little bit of a grind, or this whatever. It's like, welcome to the universe, right? That's just welcome to reality. But I don't know anyone, aside from those few necessary endings, where it's like, oh, you know, so I married an axe murderer kind of thing, and you better get divorced. But anyone who has not quit jujitsu when they had a slump, anyone who has not quit on marriage when they had a slump, anyone who has not quit on anything valuable and meaningful and rewarding when that slump comes out the other end, like, thank God I didn't quit. Like, how much better is it now? Like, it's just, you know, it's like you plateau and you peak and you plateau and you peak, but if you hit that plateau and quit, it's just like, you're never going to know how far and how high you could have gone.
Right. I mean, and we've talked to a few guys at the gym that have been there, and again, not naming names, but that have been there, like, you know, you've pointed out a few, and not in a way of like in a derogatory way, but just like kind of jokingly, and then they do it themselves, that have been at the gym for 5-10 years. But they're, you know, at that perpetual 4-stripe white belt because of how many times they leave and come back and leave and come back and leave and come back, right? And where they decide to.
Or they never leave and they try to hack jujitsu. You cannot hack marriage. You cannot hack jujitsu.
Right.
You can't hack health. All these books about how I gained 25 pounds of muscle in 3 days. And people buy that, and it's like, there's nothing in the universe worthwhile. How are you going to hack playing violin, right? So no, you just better do it for a decade and then see if you kind of have a little bit of skill. Jiu-jitsu, talk to me in 10 years. You want to learn Korean language? Talk to me in 10 years.
Yes.
People are like, I bought an app on my iPhone and I'm going to be fluent in 6 months. It's like, you're going to be a babbling idiot in 6 months.
Talk to me in 10 years. What's that average, like, hours? They said if you want to get proficient in 10,000 hours,
and,
right?
And that's a little bit weird, too.
Right,
but
right.
Still, I would say, like, you should look at, I mean, and I'm being mean because, like, I'm far along in my journeys, but let's say an 18-year-old listening to this and he's like, 10 years, that's more than half my life. I'm turning off the podcast. Let's say 1 year.
Right.
Let's say 1 year. And, like, you don't, like, when someone if someone comes into SBG and they're like, well, can I try it for a month? And it's like, well, can you try Stanford University for a month? Can you, it's like, you're going to commit.
Yes.
And then at the end of 4 years, you tell me if it was worth it. You're not going to know if it's worth it in a month, you know?
Yeah. And that's what's funny is, like, I'll talk to some parents and again, I'm not saying this to put anybody on, like, you know, on blast or anything like that. It's just, it's more of it's an interesting observation of, like, human behavior, right? Talk to somebody and go, like, oh, do you come here? And, oh, no, you know, and it's either, like, I don't have time, or I talked to a few parents where it was, I tried it for a couple months, and then I got hurt and I was sore and I just decided, like it wasn't really worth it. I said, did you get hurt or were you sore? Like, I picked, especially with my background, right? They go, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, there's a difference. I'm like, did you break your leg or did your, like, was your bicep sore? Like, those are two completely different things. Like, did you pull your hamstring? Did you, you know, and a lot of people don't know the difference and actually understand
but
how to separate that.
But that also goes back to relationship with your wife. That goes back to being in a tough class in school. It's like, it's tough because it's hard and it's meaningful. It's tough, but it's like, is your life in danger?
Yeah.
Are you going to be, like, permanently, like, on the sidelines, or is it just like you are pushing yourself to do something that you haven't done before, which is by definition uncomfortable?
Right. And, you know, and the other one was, that I heard a lot was, I don't have time. And then I probe a little bit, right? Because I like to ask questions. I go, do you work from home? They go, yeah. I said, so, and do you live close by? I do. So you do have time. Because if you work from home, you can come here during lunch.
And how many hours on Netflix?
Yes.
And how many hours in the bars?
That was my point. Yeah.
And how many hours on Facebook and Instagram? Mm-hmm. Everyone has time. Like,
yeah.
Not everyone has time to be a world champion.
No. I wouldn't. And that's not what
I wouldn't be like, you have five kids.
Yes.
You should abandon them and be a world champion. That's different. But if you're talking about learning how to do jiu-jitsu, which is improving your health, learning how to defend yourself, learning how to defend the people you love, creating good friendships. Like, no, I won't say no one, because I don't want to disrespect that. Like, one outlier who really does. But like 99% of people in America, and I don't, it's not the same if you go to India or something, right? But like 99% of the people in America can rearrange their life the way all of us did when we were younger and poor to have the time and the money to do it.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about basically just like careers. And they go, well, oh, what do? I said, well, you know, I have this part-time job like in operations management. And they go, oh, do you like that? I go, no, I can't stand it. I said, but what it does for me is it provides me this structure, this base structure of providing my family with like insurance and some pay in the morning. But I'm half my day is while they're asleep. And then I'm home by 10:30 in the morning, which allows me and my wife to come to jiu-jitsu together 4 days a week at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, where most parents can't do that because they, you know, choose not to, or like their schedule doesn't permit it, right? And then it opens up the rest of my day to bring my kids. And because how many dads can come to 3, 4, or 5 o'clock afternoon classes with their children and spend time and quality there too? And then also work on like my hobbies that I want to turn into careers, podcasting, consulting, training, all those other things as well too, right? So I could go take a job that's going to pay me six figures in the corporate world now, but my family wouldn't see me. I would never be able to do jiu-jitsu. Or if I did, I'd have to do like a 5 a.m.
Go ahead and I'll go next. It's
two things. Yeah. Sitting here listening.
Yeah.
One that can't be glossed over is priorities.
Right.
So, I, at the end of the day, I don't remember where I got this from, but you are the product of your priorities. Mm-hmm. So whatever your priorities are, like, it will be reflected in who you are and your life.
That's a good way of putting it.
But the other thing is, my bigger pet peeve than, and I hear it all the time, you know, somebody will even come in for, you know, a consultation and they're like, yeah, my work schedule is just so busy and I got this, this, and this. And they're basically a list of excuses for why they don't have time. We can all agree that we have the same amount of time. We've already been through that. But my bigger pet peeve is I can't afford it. That's the one thing. Like, I don't care what you tell me at the end of your consultation. Like, if you tell me whatever you want, this isn't for me. I don't like people close to me. I don't want to, you know, I'm claustrophobic or, you know, whatever. That's fine. But I can't afford it. Unacceptable.
Yeah.
Unacceptable. If you found us through the internet, or if you found us by driving your car past our location, and you come in with your iPhone and your Starbucks coffee, and you proceed to tell me that you really want to do this and it's really, your health is really important to you, or you really want to be able to defend yourself, and then you say, but I can't afford it,
right?
I'll be honest with you. The first thought that comes into my mind is liar. You're a liar, because here's the
thing. That's brutal honesty, but it's true.
But here's the thing. Of all the people who've ever come into the gym, I don't know if there's one person ever who's come into the gym who doesn't have a television.
Right.
That right there, like, if my first question should be, hey, John, do you have a TV? His answer is going to be yes.
And then what's your cable bill each month?
Correct. Yep. And then, and I'm, be like, I'm like, hey, do you have Wi-Fi at your house? Like, how many people do you know that don't have Wi-Fi at their house?
Right.
And then I'm like, how did you get here? Well, I drove my car. It's like, okay. And how many days a week do you go out for coffee?
That's a big one.
How many weekends do you drop
at 10 least, bucks a day? Yeah.
At least $100 at the bars.
Drinks,
right? Like, I mean, it's just, it's madness.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Cause it's just not true.
Right. And then if you take the emotion out of it, like we, like I was saying earlier, we came here in the summer, you know, put a deposit, basically prepaying for like half the payment for my whole family. Like there's seven of us, like, and we signed everybody up, you know, Phoebe, you know, my 3-year-old, and at the time she was 2, you know, and we were like, hey, how old do they have to be? And you're like, well, as long as they're potty trained. I'm like, she's potty trained. So, and
she has not wet the mat yet.
No. But she, so we
for
were,
for the record, yes. Phoebe's awesome.
Thank you. She thinks your guys are awesome. Phoebe's this 3-year-old little cutie with fire, and you know, the youngest of 5.
Wait 10 years.
She's going to be this 13-year-old savage.
I'm going to have to start charging more for the handholding.
You should, yeah.
I don't normally act as a personal escort.
Uh-huh.
But she's made you. Every single class that I teach, I personally walk her out to the lobby.
When Anna Marie told me that, now it's become a thing because the other kids at that age are like, they want what they don't have, and they see that Phoebe gets walked out by you every day, and now there's this gaggle of kids trying to hold on to your belt as they come out.
That's cool.
But it's my point was, we did that, right? And then once we got through our whole foundations program and the kids did theirs, and then it was moving on to the next program, and then sitting down with Leah and talking about like the cost for added classes and everything else as well, there was never this thing of like, I'm not going to pay, or I'm just going to stop and just sit in foundations for the next like 3 years. Like that was never an option.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
This is another pet peeve of I've had people that lose their shit. Like,
I have to pay more to come more? Yes.
And I'm like, I don't think you're allowed to say retarded anymore. But
oh, you can say it, I do.
But
it's
I'm
my
like,
podcast.
But I'm like, are you retarded? Like, you, where in your life?
Yeah.
Oh, let's go back to the cable.
Yeah.
What package do you have?
Yes.
Oh, well, I have the basic package. Cool. But you can't watch the fights? No, because I have the basic package.
Gotcha.
Well, we should watch the fights this weekend. Okay. I'll call Spectrum.
That's an extra $80. Yeah.
And you're like, are you kidding me? Like, yeah. This is a scam. Like, you're ripping me off. Like, you mean I have to pay more to get more?
Yeah.
It's like you go to a restaurant. You're like, you want an appetizer?
Yeah.
You want a dessert? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you want a cocktail?
Not part of the entree. No.
It's no. Like, give me a break. Or you get on an airplane. And it's like.
Business class.
Right.
It's like, how come they get to go through that line?
Yeah. Because they pay more.
How come they get warm cookies and real silverware and a plate? And why don't they have to pay for their drinks? Yeah. They did pay for their drinks. Yeah. They spent more money on their ticket than you did.
You spent $200 on your ticket. They spent $1,000.
Like, it's like you drive a Volkswagen.
Mm-hmm.
He drives a Ferrari.
Right.
He paid more money for his car. Sure. Why? Because it's better than your car.
Yeah.
And so you came into the gym. You started in foundations.
Yep.
You came twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm giving you an opportunity because you're not a spaz anymore.
Yep.
To take on more classes,
mm-hmm.
come to Open Mat, join comp team, all this other stuff. And guess what? It costs a little bit more to get a little bit more.
Well, and what's funny is like, it's not that because of your schedule, you go like, well, I'm only coming an extra day. Well, that's your choice. Like if you pay a Netflix bill and you pay $30 a month for Netflix, whether you watch one movie or 80 movies, it's still $30 a month. Or none. Right, exactly. You're paying for the opportunity of the service.
Now you're getting...
It's up to you to maximize it.
Right.
Now we're going down a rabbit hole
that
I could go off on.
No.
I'll say one thing.
Yeah.
This is important too.
Yes.
Because I'm not a business owner.
Right.
I'm less knowledgeable, but more objective mm-hmm. than my friends who own businesses.
Sure.
So I don't know the ins and outs, but I have like a third person view of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone pays.
Yes.
You're going to pay the hospital.
Yeah.
In the end, when your quality of life sucks
mm-hmm.
and you're broken. And I don't care about lifespan because people can stick tubes in all your holes and keep you alive for a long time. I care about health span.
Yes.
Right. I want my health span to be as long as possible. So if you are investing,
mm-hmm.
if you're paying like $50 more a month or $100 more a month, it's like, if you, and I tell my wife this because she's much smarter than I am and she's much better at planning for the future than I am. And like, I just give her my paycheck and like, you do it. And she makes it bigger. I know how to make it smaller. I know how to make it smaller. She knows how to make it bigger. So I'm like, you do it.
Yeah.
And she's good at it. And mm-hmm. she's a pro. But the one thing I tell her is like, look, you don't need to do jiu-jitsu, but you know, whether it's like a little bit of the warm-ups or some yoga or some fitness, because she can do her job and she can get us, like, let's say, like, over the next 20 years, she does an awesome job of investing in all these different places, and we have $1 million in the bank.
Right.
You get really sick, mm-hmm. and you go to a hospital and you really need all the machines.
Gone. Yeah.
A month, you're yeah. all, it's all gone.
Yeah, $50,000 for this, $10,000 in medication.
30 years of working your ass off.
Yeah.
So it's like everyone pays. So better to pay and have mm-hmm. a wonderful life than to have a shitty life in the first place and lose it all at the end anyway.
Yeah. And that was the thing. Like, when we went to the next part of the program, there was never a discussion of, like, are we going to do this or not? It was very simple. It was like, sit down with Leo. Okay, what's the cost? What are the options? And then Anna Marie and I sat down, because we both make money, right? And then we sat there and said, okay, what's the smartest option right now with what we're trying to do with, like, a house and everything else, and, like, planning with family and whatnot too. And it was very simple. I said, okay, let's do this monthly payment. Cool, gotcha. And it wasn't like, I'm just going to throw out this much money a month, right? Like, from the responsible factor, I looked at it like, and it wasn't because we couldn't afford it. It was like, it's this much more a month. So I looked at it as like, I know I can cut that out a month in expenses and money I spend somewhere else and not feel it. I don't have to, but the smart choice was, with five kids, I should do that. And that's what I did. I went and looked at where I go, oh, you know what? I go to the gas station 3 times a week and buy, you know, an energy drink and a protein bar. Right. Like, that's, if I do that, it's $10 a visit, right? 3 times a week, there's $30 in a month. Do the math, right? That's half the tuition right there. Don't do that anymore. Right. Simple.
Yeah. When I'm not disciplined, I, like, back in Korea, if mm-hmm. I'm at work, I'm one coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
One at lunch. Sometimes if I'm busy, one a little bit after lunch. It's $10 a day. It's $300 a month.
Yeah.
Coffee.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on alcohol.
Yeah.
You know,
just coffee.
Yeah. But I mean, I could just, like, brew my own coffee and drink 2 cups a day instead of one, and already, like, I mm-hmm. can have $300 a month for sure. gym membership.
Yeah. So you can, like, you can go back to, you find the time, you can find the money, you can find, it's all about prioritizing what you want to do.
Yeah. And like I was saying, like, look, I say this all the time, because I get to go teach and stuff, and,
yeah.
And I host these big camps, right? And the camps are like $300. Mm-hmm. And when I go teach, like, I think, I don't remember, like, I for you guys, like, when you guys come out, I charge like $200 for 2 days or $150 for 1 day or something like that. And it's like, bro, like, people come in there like they're doing me a favor. And it's like, man, I really don't need your $200.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't.
Yeah.
Like, it's what I do appreciate is, holy shit, you just gave me 8 hours of your life.
Yeah. Right.
A whole,
like,
weekend.
Like, mm-hmm. what's that worth?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but honestly, and it's not because I don't care.
Yeah.
I do care. And I get it. Like, $200 for sure. For some people, $200 is more than $200 for another person.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you can always make more money. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the one thing I can promise you. Like, you can always make more money.
Always.
You always can. But the one thing I can also promise you is, you cannot make more time.
Right.
Period. Like, nobody has figured that one out yet. You cannot make more time. And so, to me, it's an honor. Like, if I get up and teach, even like my regular classes,
yeah.
I come in on Wednesday and there's 30 people on the mat, I'm stoked.
Yeah. I think it's awesome. Like, you can go in a Wednesday afternoon at 12 and there's like 30 people, like adults, working adults,
that will take
a lunch period and come do jiu-jitsu.
It invigorates me.
Yeah.
Like, when I come into the gym and it's packed, I'm like, holy shit. Like, 30 people think that I have enough to offer mm-hmm. that they're giving me an hour of their life. Right?
Yeah.
But like, gym memberships and stuff, it's like, man, I kick people out. Like, I tear up their agreements. I'm just like, dude, I don't need your $189 or whatever you're paying me. Like, it's not enough.
Yeah.
Because I value my time.
Yes.
So if you're a pain in my ass or you make it miserable for me to come to the gym, which is that's my place.
Or discourage other members.
Yeah. Correct. Oh, that's a big one.
Because you can try to save one F up.
Yeah.
And you think you're being nice.
Uh-huh.
But he or she makes 10 people quit.
Yeah.
And their ego won't say, oh, he's too rough, because they want to be tough. Oh, I'm kind of busy at work.
Yeah.
They don't want to tell you the truth. Yeah. But you can lose 5 to save one where you should
if
just
you,
like,
if you lose one student, mm-hmm. that's too many. Yeah. Like what, if you have a student that makes one person quit, you should get rid of that one person.
Right. That's huge. I actually just got Anna Marie over the last year to actually start implementing that because, and this wasn't a knock on say certain individuals. What it was is she would, and only to me, obviously, because I'm her husband. And also I was in the personal training industry for 15 years. She would vent to me about specific clients that they never did anything she told them to do. They would always like fight back. They always push back. And then they were always like this kind of problem child. I'm sitting there going like, how much do they pay you a month? And she would tell me like whatever it was, like $150 a month, $200 a month. It was an online client or it was like a once a week thing. I said, you've spent, and I basically ballparked it. I said, you spent 10 hours over the last month like complaining to me yes. about this client, right? And
I'm,
I said,
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah. And I told her, I said, you've trained them for 4 hours this month. So you've doubled the time that you've spent in your energy. Yeah. And I know you're thinking about it more than you are even actually talking to me about it. I said, I'll pay you the $200 if you drop this freaking client. Right? Right, yeah. And it's not because I'm sick of you talking. That had nothing to do with it at all whatsoever. Just the quality, like the impact it had on your life and the negativity and the amount of time it was taken from yeah. you and the energy away from like our kids, from me yes. and you, from like I don't want to hear about your client that sucks on our date, you know?
Right. And even if you were, I'll play total devil's advocate. Yeah. First of all, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
But even devil's advocate, let's say I'm single.
Yeah.
And I'm not because it is taken away from my wife. Mm-hmm. It's taken away from my daughter. But even if I'm single and all I do is I teach jujitsu, mm-hmm. it's also taking away from the good students because like I will, and so I'm guilty of it. I'm working on it right now. I will spend a lot of time and energy and emotion on the people who aren't really following the rules.
Right.
Whereas what I should be doing is firing them
yeah,
and spending all that energy on the people who are. And it's really, if you think about it, it's like, okay, it's like 75% of my guys are on board. They're training hard. They should get all my energy.
Yeah.
They should get all my time. I'm like, well, you guys are good, so you don't need me. And then I'm out there with these guys who, and by the way, I'm not saying if you worked, you know, 10 hours a day for 10 years, you wouldn't like save one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean? Like 99% of it, you already right. know. Like yeah. they're already gone.
Yeah.
And so it's just way better to be like, yeah, you're done. And I'm going to focus on the people who are like really training hard and doing the right thing.
And that gets me to back to that whole point of the culture that's created. You know, may not want to take the credit for it to an extent, but those actions that you do were like you set standards where you eliminate the problem trials and make it like inclusive. And I don't say inclusive in this weird kind of woke culture kind of thing that's going on right now. I'm talking about where like people want to come in and go like, I have an hour break. I'm going to haul ass across town and I'm going to do the class and then change and shower and go back to work because it's so worth it. Cause I know if I show up at Wednesday at noon, I'm going to get so much value out of that class versus a different time or maybe not going to class at all whatsoever, right? But that's something that's created because like you've cultivated it, you've pruned it, you've like really, you guys have really created this thing where that exists in that environment. And it's not something that just happens by accident.
You're right.
Yeah.
Pruning is a good analogy. Yeah. I talk about pruning a lot. It's yeah. like the tree's getting smaller and you're like, yeah, so it can get bigger.
Yeah. It gets stronger.
It gets a little smaller and then,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Chaps are comfortable now.
Well, no, because we could talk about this for 5 hours, but right. it's also kind of self-evident. Like, yeah. whoever's listening,
yeah,
the people who get it, we don't need to go for another hour. And the people who don't get it,
yeah,
they either are the ones who are about to quit, or in a year they'll be like, "Oh my god, that's what they were talking about." Right. So you just have to plant the seed. They, yeah,
just to be clear, and this is just my opinion, and they all get it.
Sure.
The difference is some people refuse to accept it. Like there are people listening right now who I'm sure are seething like, this guy's an asshole. Like some people really can't afford it. And it's like, you know what, dude? You know I'm right.
Yeah.
Like look, if you're listening to a podcast right now,
yeah,
you can afford it.
Sure.
Like how are you listening to this podcast right now?
Yeah, right.
Like, shut up
on your phone, on a computer,
have a free hour.
Yes.
Yeah. No, Oh, I don't have time for it. You just you just spend an hour listening to a podcast. Yeah.
The difference is what I would say is you can both be right. Like, you, they can be right about you being an asshole, and you, you can be right that they can afford it.
This, I'd never said that those two things were not true.
That's true. No, they,
but,
yeah.
But no, I try not to get frustrated anymore. I see a therapist now. So, yeah. Like, you know,
it's good.
It's a kinder, gentler version of Travis that you're getting.
Correct. No, and I'm proud of that. It really is a different version. That's true. But I will say that I still get very frustrated.
Right.
That there are people that have convinced themselves, mm-hmm. or at least are trying to convince the people around them,
yeah.
that they don't have time.
Yeah.
Because, like we all agreed on, we all have 24 hours. Yep. They can't afford it. And I just don't believe that. Like, yeah. I honestly don't believe that. Look, when I started jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. It was 1999. Mm-hmm. My wife was pregnant with our first child. We lived in an apartment. I made $8 an hour sweeping out houses. Mm-hmm. And I signed up the first night I went there. I never looked back. I was there every single day. Everyone in my family, her family, mm-hmm. her, to a certain extent, thought I was an idiot, mm-hmm. selfish, blah, 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 like fill in the blank. Within 6 months of being at the gym, I signed up for ICC, which is the instructor's candidate course, which is the equivalent of my legacy program, which mm-hmm. is basically a pay once lifetime membership. And back then in 1999, it was $3,600. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of money back then. Like I drove like a Fred Flintstone truck. Like, you could literally see the concrete through the floorboards of my 1978 Dodge Power Wagon. And I figured out how to come up with $360 a month to pay that off. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, I was a genius.
Yeah.
Like, I really was. And,
except you didn't do it thinking you'd make money.
Correct.
You did it because you wanted to be good at jiu-jitsu, which is, motives are important.
They're huge.
And it's ironic that the people who make the most money didn't get into it for the money.
Yeah.
No, it's passion. And it has to be passion. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, like, and this is in defense of mine and her family. You know what? All those same people take so much pride in, like, touring the gyms, and they take so much pride in Keese and I, and they're so like, man, this is really awesome. Like, mm-hmm. I can't believe you guys did that. And it's like, well, sometimes you have to make sacrifices. Like, you have to take hard steps.
Right.
And that was a giant sacrifice. I mean, $8 an hour, $320 a week. I'm basically taking more than a quarter of my monthly income and paying it towards my gym. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I guess my frustration comes from the fact, similar to your story, John, it's like, man, I can't sit here and listen to that because it could be, for one thing, I'm not looking at a 20 something year old.
Yeah.
With a pregnant wife who's living in an apartment. Like, I'm looking at somebody who has two or three or four times, sometimes more than that, income than I did at the time that I made it work.
Yeah, the financial means is there. Yeah.
Correct. And the time thing too. It's like, man.
Yeah.
I like the verb make.
Yeah.
You don't... sometimes I find a $20 bill in my jeans after I wash them like three times. I'm like, awesome. Beer money.
Yeah.
But really, what you have to make it. Like, nobody finds time. Nobody finds money. You don't find love. You don't find skill. Like, you create it. And it takes time and effort. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, oh, one day I woke up and, wait, I'll talk to you in 6 months. I'll have enough time and money. Like,
right.
You'll die with that mindset.
Yeah.
Or you'll be in your 20s and poor, mm-hmm. and you'll just make it happen.
Well, I don't know how we got this direction, but we're going to keep going.
I like it.
It's a good one.
I'm going to say this, like, look, choices matter.
Mm-hmm.
Decisions matter. And I know a lot of people are really fond of like finding a way to kind of explain their decisions, explain their choices, apologize, justify, whatever you want to say. But here's what I'll say, and this is again just my opinion. This is not jujitsu, but at the end of the day, just like you're a product of your priorities,
mm-hmm.
you're an accumulation of decisions you've made. Mm-hmm. And it's not one, like one decision outside of a few.
Yeah.
But one decision doesn't doom you or destine you for a certain thing.
Yeah.
But
positive or negative.
Correct.
Yeah.
But enough decisions mm-hmm. over time
right.
is why you're where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And if people would just stop and say, you know what? My life sucks right now. My health sucks. I'm unhappy. I'm this. I'm that. And if they sat there for a second and were just brutally honest, they would recognize that the result was the accumulation of not one
mm-hmm.
or two or 10, but a lot of bad choices and bad decisions. And that's on them, 100%.
Yeah.
And when it comes to jujitsu or mm-hmm. or whatever the choice is, or even bigger picture, like business. Like I know you yeah. like to talk about like entrepreneurship and business and stuff. And I feel like I have a little bit of room to talk about this. the thing that drives me crazy is nobody ever sees all of the hard choices and all of the difficult decisions that lead over time.
Yeah.
Because it's an accumulation of those, and it's an accumulation of sacrifices.
Right.
And okay, well, we can't really afford that right now. We can't afford it. Why? Because I prioritize something else. I prioritize something else. And people who get to a place in their life where they're frustrated and struggling, it's like, man, but don't you remember like the 50 times where you chose
mm-hmm.
the convenient, easy, comfortable thing?
Yep.
And then 1% of the people chose, like they saw the long game, they envisioned the long game. And they also knew what was right.
Yeah.
And even though what was right was hard at the time and difficult, they chose that one. It's not luck.
Yeah.
It's not. And, you know, to look at people that have the things that you want
mm-hmm.
and to be like, yeah, man, I wish I was as lucky as he was. It's like, you know what? Go fuck yourself.
Oh.
We're going rated R?
No, yeah.
So two things pop into my head. Mm-hmm. Totally agree. One was another mentor when I was young who was like a really famous guitar player in California. And he had a band. He has a couple records. And he moved to Austin, Texas to do his PhD at UT in linguistics. And he told me, he's just like straight up, he's like in California, like Northern California where I was from. He's like, I was the guitar king.
Right.
And he said, in Austin, every gas station attendant was better than me. He just said it.
Yeah.
And then he said, everyone wants to be, it was back when like Stevie Ray Vaughan was mm-hmm. the king. He's like, everyone wants to be Stevie Ray Vaughan. No one wants to lock themselves in a room for 10 hours mm-hmm. and just practice every day. Like everyone wants to be on stage yeah. with chicks screaming. Everyone wants to be a black belt, effortlessly choking people and armbarring people. Yeah. Everyone wants to have $5 million in their bank account. But it's like the guys who have it, it's like that's because it's like they didn't even think about 20 years from now, I'm going to have $5 million.
No.
20 years from now, I'm going to be a famous rock star. 20 years from now, I'm going to be, it's like, it was like, I'm going to get up today and I'm going to play guitar for 7 hours. I'm going to get up today, I'm going to do jujitsu.
It's like, accumulation of work.
I'm going to get up today, I'm going to work hard.
Yeah. And I'm going to tie that back into priorities one more time.
You prioritize that versus other things.
That's the thing. And for parents that are listening, because I talk about this too.
That's why I brought up the life thing, like how this all applies to life, right?
And I'm going
to
tell you, because it's there's a lot of stuff that I struggle with, and there's a lot of stuff I still don't understand.
You and me both.
But there's a couple of things I feel like I've taken my licks. Like I've had some hard things. And one of the things I definitely feel like I do understand is that, like Stevie Ray Vaughan, he prioritized playing the guitar over everything else. He was passionate about playing the guitar. And if you have a kid who's passionate about racing motocross or carving surfboards in your garage or whatever it is, and I'll segue to relationships too.
Yeah.
If you're passionate about somebody, like if you have a passion for somebody, then you just do the hard stuff.
Yeah.
You just do it. It's not even, it almost doesn't even become a choice at that point. It's just like, well, this is what I do. Like I love this person.
Yeah.
Like it, it's hard.
That's a good point. You know, the idea of calling.
Yeah.
I like the idea of calling. Like, because that means something is calling out to me. Uh-huh. I'm not saying, I want to be a guitar hero.
Right.
This is a hot chick. I want her. Or like, this is the job. Calling is like, no, it is calling to me. Mm-hmm. And I have to answer that call. So I fully agree.
Yep. No. And that's how it's been for me. Mm-hmm. You know, like my relationship with Kisa. We talked about Kisa a long time last night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not easy. Like if people only knew, because that's the other thing. I get that all the time. Like, oh, you and Kisa, like, oh, you're like, you're so perfect. And you know, you have this like magical relationship.
It's they'll see like a social media post and you like, you know, one of you guys, you know, waxing poetically about the other one. And they're just like, oh, look, it's a perfect couple.
No.
And they don't see all the 20, 30 years of just like this investment of like blood, sweat and tears and hard work.
And let me tell you something, like, no.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Not even close. No fairy tale.
Yeah.
No nothing. I just happen to love that person.
Yeah.
I love that person so much that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing that's going to push me away from that. And jujitsu, like I love jujitsu. Mm-hmm. I've loved jujitsu for 22 years. Right. You were talking about this, like, you don't get to decide, like, I want to be an entrepreneur. Like, either you're passionate about building stuff, and if you're not, it's just going to be one failure after the next, one failure after the next, and eventually you just quit.
Yeah.
And same with jujitsu. Like, you either love jujitsu, and it never even crosses your mind. Like, you're never like, oh, I quit.
And because for the first 10 years, you're going to lose a lot more than you win.
Oh, for sure.
So you got to like jujitsu because everyone likes winning.
Yeah.
Winning little babies who will throw a tantrum and smear their shit on the wall still know it's fun to win.
Yeah.
But as you go through jujitsu, it's like, okay, just get ready to lose a lot more than you win for 10 years and maybe you'll start to even out. Maybe.
That's one of the things I love about it is like understanding myself on patience is... Like I knew enough about it, and then I knew enough about myself, especially because the last 4 years I had like done all this like super introspective work on myself because, you know, and get this later or next time, but like about 4 years ago, like I almost lost my marriage and I really had to kind of like hunker down and really like tear everything down. Like,
I'm going to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
No one at this table. No,
listen, how long have you been married?
14 years. So 14 years. Together 18.
So like, So like together 18.
Yeah.
I'm like 21 together, like 24. Mm-hmm, he's 23. Like 5 years ahead of that. There are some people who've been in a marriage for 2 years and maybe it's just like, it looks like a Hollywood movie.
Sure.
And there's a reason all movies end with a wedding ceremony.
Yeah.
Because that's when it gets hard, right?
Right.
They end with the wedding.
That's interesting. Right?
Yeah. But like, I've had 10 toes and my nose looking into the abyss.
Right.
3 times.
Yeah.
Minimum 3 times. Mm-hmm. Like literally staring into the abyss.
Yeah.
I've been marriage counseling twice.
Yeah.
over that 23-year period, which is
not two times, but two separate periods.
Yeah. Two totally separate.
Yeah, like, different occasions.
Separated by a decade
right.
or more.
Yeah, or more.
Actually, more.
Yeah, and it's like no one.
No, but this is my, that's my. Yeah.
But you choose.
No, we're all saying the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is my point. Like, it, it, you, I like calling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important.
If you have a calling, then you don't get a stop because you know what? This is inconvenient.
Yeah.
This is hard now, or that's not the way it works.
That's a hobby. That's a hobby.
Calling is pulling me.
Mm-hmm. Hobby is like, what do I want to do?
Yeah. Like what seems interesting. Yeah.
But unfortunately there is a whole like section of books and there's a whole section of culture that's like, yeah, you should be happy all the time. And you know, if that doesn't make you happy, you need to, you know, cut bait, move on, do this, do that, whatever. And it's like, no, man, like, You will never get to experience like a deep relationship. You'll never get to experience like a deep understanding of something if whenever it becomes uncomfortable or it becomes difficult, you're like, okay, well, this must not be for me because why don't I feel perfect? Like, why is this not perfect? Like, that's part of the process.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it is an analogous to jujitsu because man, jujitsu is, it's up and down and ebbs and flows. And there's times where you're like, I get it. I understand jujitsu. I'm fucking crushing it.
Yeah.
I'm so good. And then you know what happens right after that?
Yeah.
How did I forget jujitsu? Like, I can't beat anyone anymore. Like, I'm terrible. Like, I'm awful at jujitsu.
Yeah.
And then you know what that precedes?
Yeah.
I'm awesome at jujitsu. Like, yeah. I got this down pat.
And that applies to real life. It applies to whether it's a career you're in, whether it's something you're pursuing that you're passionate about. That's, and then if the passion or the hard work starts, like, fades or the hard work starts coming in, then you realize, like, okay, is this something I really want to do? Like marriage.
Yeah. Right?
A career transition that you want to get into from something you're doing because it makes you money, but you're not happy, to something you want to do, but the money's not there right away. Like, I was showing, when I made a post about like my setup here and how I'm like kind of building this up. You know, kind of an acquaintance messaged me. He's like, oh man, you're lucky. Like, I just, like, I've been trying to put something together for like a while. Lucky. Yeah. And yeah, I'm sitting there going, I'm like, definitely, do you think I made like, I haven't made a dollar. Like, dude, like I spent money on this. This is like, I've invested time, and it's not like I'm sitting on my ass doing nothing. I have five kids. I go to jiu-jitsu 4 days a week.
You are sitting on your ass.
Well, right now, technically, yes, I am sitting on my ass, but I spent money to sit on my ass. So, but my point was like, I chose, like, this is something that is, I've been wanting to do for a long time, and then I started it when I had a full-time, like, corporate gig and five kids, and then a pandemic. Like there's all these excuses to stop doing it, right? Like, whatever
or
it
or
is.
Or not even start.
Or not even start. That's the big one too, right? And it's, it, so to me, like, it's actually how the whole foundation of this podcast even kind of came to be. Like, I was working a corporate gig and I was talking to people, and I would go, like, I was telling Travis this, like, I would go to work after working for myself for 15 years, and I would talk to people in administrative work or HR or all these different aspects. And all these things I heard about from clients for years was actually coming to fruition now, where I'd see somebody on a Monday and, hey, how's it going? Like, oh God, it's Monday. Like, you see them on Friday. Woohoo, it's Friday. I'm like, you hate 2/3 of your life. It sucks to be you. Like, why would you do this?
I know. Lover Boy sings a song about that.
Oh yeah?
Everybody's working for the weekend.
Yeah. And I thought,
it's a horrible way to live.
Well, exactly. So, and then of course, because I don't have a filter, I'm like, well, why do you have this job? And they look at me funny. Like, what do you mean, why do I have this job? Because it pays me $65,000 a year in insurance. So of course I have this job. What do you like to do? You know, and then they would name a hobby. And it's like, was that a hobby? Is that something you're really passionate about? Like, well, I'm passionate about it. Like, well, why don't you go do that? Like, well, I can't do that. Why not? Like, well, I don't know how to make money doing that. And then, like, in five sentences, you give them like an entryway into understanding, like, do you have social media? I do. Do you follow people that do this for a living? I do. What do you think they did?
Right.
Yeah. And then you see like the things tick. And then the ones that
you're
see.
You're so lucky.
No, I love that one.
Yeah.
You're so lucky. Yeah. I wish I could teach jujitsu for a living. I'm like, You can teach jiu-jitsu for a living. You just suck at everything else that goes into it.
My favorite was when I talked to a friend of mine back in California. And he goes, hey, you go to the same gym as Andy Stumpf? And I said, yeah. And he's like, is he a cool guy? I go, well, what do you mean? Like, I didn't understand what he was asking me, right? Like, well, you know, it's kind of lucky he's in Montana. Like, he's got this podcast because he was on Rogan and Jocko's podcast, you know. And just, I said, wait, hold on. And then I went down, like, I'm like, you mean lucky after spending 20 years in the military and then 10 years taking of CrossFit?
Taking a bullet.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then bust his ass in CrossFit.
Setting
and then
world records.
Yeah. And then, like, I'm like, I'm not, naming this litany of stuff before he.
Right. He's not lucky. He's the luckiest guy.
Like, yeah. But, and before he even got to the podcast part, right? Like, all these, like, 30 years of, like, all this stuff. Right? I'm sitting there going, yeah, it's really lucky, you know? And,
yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
People are stupid.
Right. That's a good way to end this podcast.
There you go.
Thank you so much, you guys.
But they don't have to
be. They don't have to be. It's a choice.
And back to your, I really liked what you guys are saying. I couldn't really interject myself, but product of your priorities, and you're talking about long-term planning. So I'm staying in Montana right now on the graciousness of Rob Wolf, kind of, you know, stealing a room in his house. And, you know, one of the things he said about nutrition a long time ago, which hit me, because, like, real principles, like first principles apply to everything.
Right.
They apply to jiu-jitsu, they apply to marriage, they apply to nutrition. So Rob was talking about nutrition, but it was a first principle, so I could apply it to everything. And he was like, your body is really well adapted to deal with acute stress, like one bad day.
Yeah.
I could eat nothing but ice cream and cake today. And if I got back on a good training program and a good diet tomorrow, it would be nothing.
Fine.
It's not equipped to deal with chronic stress. So, right. Like, I'll just have, you know, a little bit of cake every day and a couple donuts every day and just work out less every day. So it's just another way of saying you're product of your priorities, your product of your decisions and your actions. I wouldn't, like, people are stupid is how I feel too, because I'm kind of a dick, which is why we get along. But I wouldn't want to turn, if anyone's, like, listening to the end of this, means they have some endurance and they already kind of, even if they're like, Travis is being kind of a dick, they're still here. You guys, you're still listening, which means you kind of also realize that we're trying to help you. And I would say, it's like, don't, back to what I said before, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Mm-hmm. We all drink a little too much bourbon one night, or, like, you know, it's like, okay, my wife wants to finish a half gallon of ice cream. Let's go for it. You know, it's not that, right? It's like, look at it in months and years and decades. And if you know, your columns in the year is like good choices, bad choices, you're fine. Don't let a couple, like, everyone sell you a half gallon of ice cream or drink a bottle of bourbon if they want to. But it's the ratio.
Yes.
And that's what I was saying earlier too. Yeah. And that's where Kisa gets it better than I do. And that goes back to your two times a week, three times a week, whatever. Yeah. It's like, look, good is good enough. Mm-hmm. And the reality is don't set your bar so high that it's like, oh,
can't even start. Yeah.
I drank a bottle of bourbon today. Mm-hmm. Therefore I have to do it tomorrow. And then I have to do it the day after that and the day after that. And it's like, no. Like, give yourself a little grace. Like,
grace is important.
No,
none of us are perfect, and none of us will be perfect. But, you know, don't use that attitude to just completely slack off either. Yeah. Like, like, pick a couple of days a week and just be like, you know what? I don't work out at all right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to commit to 2 days a week.
Yep.
I won't miss these 2 days. Mm-hmm. Ideally, I'm going to commit to these three or four. And when I miss one of those, it's okay, because I'm going to be there at least 2 days a week.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, just steps, you know, like, nobody's too far gone to, you know, start a better, good habit.
There, no,
you know, that's the not dickhead.
That's 100% real life. Like, we have a family member that's been a client of ours off and on. And what he would do is, he ballooned all the way up to 350 pounds, and he's 5'6".
Whoa.
Yeah. And he has
very American.
Yeah, and he's a corporate geek. But it was all internalized and stress and everything else, too. And then he would start, and he would lose some weight, and he would have a day where he would eat bad, right, and would eat a bunch of crap. And then instead of saying, like, this was a bad day, he would decide, well, it's a bad day, so I'm going to take the car and go Thelma and Louise off the, you know, like he would order.
Turn it a bad month.
Oh, yeah. Well, not even that. I mean, he would turn the day into like, I'm going to have two Domino's pizzas and I'm going to drink a pitcher of beer tonight on top of all the crap I ate today.
Right.
And then that would just careen the whole thing over. And it was just this perpetual cycle. And I'm like, you know, it finally took a while. I mean, he finally broke it, you know, and number one, it was a combination of like making a decision of like, it's not all or nothing. Number two, getting some therapy. And number three, actually sticking to a plan that was functional to where if you fell off a little bit, it wasn't an all or nothing thing. And he's down 70 pounds now over the last 6 months. So right. Like, that's actually, cool. Yeah. So it's, that's like when you talked about that, it totally reminded me of that situation. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it's a real thing. I mean, it happens to me too. It's like you set an expectation, mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to do this, this, and this. And then you slip up,
yeah.
or, you know, shit happens and whatever. And then you can either let that, you know, be a thing where you're like, okay, well, tomorrow mm-hmm. I'm back
yeah.
on track.
Right.
Or you can fall into that mindset of like, well, I already messed up. So I might as well just,
yeah,
I'm not going to be any good at this ever anyways. I'm a failure. Yeah. So this is my...
The other thing about not starting, which is really important, I think, for people to hear, because it's so obvious, but some people don't ever think about it, is we've talked a lot about money and time, but there's a little bit of ageism too.
Right.
I'm 40 years old. I can't do jiu-jitsu. I'm you know, and like, I'll be 55 when I get my black belt. And what I always tell people is like, you're going to be 55 anyway.
Yeah, like that's like coming time, no matter what.
time's not stopping because you don't join jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Like,
better to be a black belt
healthy,
at 55.
Healthy and tough
yeah.
and capable, because guess what? You're going to be fat and mm-hmm. stupid at 55. You're going to be black belt at 55. Like, time is not stopping because you don't invest in your jiu-jitsu or your health and fitness.
Oh, 100%.
So like, and if anyone is worried, There might be some gyms where you come in at like 60.
Yeah.
There's the dude in Whitefish just relocated from Laguna Beach, California. Yeah. I like that dude.
Yeah, he goes to our church.
Yeah.
He's awesome, a nice guy.
Yeah. What is he, like 60?
Yeah, he's like in his early 60s, mid-60s. Yeah.
Successful businessman. Yeah. Kind of like closed mm-hmm. up shop in California because yep. things were getting a little too kinky there.
Yep.
He moved here. He's like pretty much a beginner, but he's very enthusiastic. And it's like, no good gym is going to try to train him the way they train an 18-year-old.
Right.
They're not going to fold him up and hurt his back yep. and everything. It's going to be appropriate resistance, appropriate difficulty, mm-hmm. appropriate strain, without ever being fake.
Yeah.
But appropriate for 18 is different than appropriate for 65.
When he even understands the importance of like time, because he also does the classes and he does a private once a week as well.
Yeah.
Well, so, I think, you know Rick Plavidal.
Yeah. He's a savage.
I think I gave him his black belt at 64.
He's a little bit different because, I mean, he was already like a complete like judo black belt lived in Japan stud.
Right.
But a 64-year-old body is a 64-year-old body.
Sure.
Like, you still have to take care of yourself.
My point in saying that is it's like, he was 64 when he got his black belt.
Yeah.
It's which pretty means awesome. He started training at like
mid-50s.
Mid-50s.
Right.
Not like I'm too old.
No.
He came, and he's world traveler, came training with me in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Sailed his yacht around the world.
Well, COVID put a stop to that, but
yeah.
he just came back into the gym. Did you meet him when he came in?
Was he there in Kalispell a couple weeks back?
Yeah, he was visiting.
Kind of salt and pepper hair. Like,
it's not salt and pepper.
Well, now it's all gray. Yeah.
But no, he's still doing he's going to sail around the world mm-hmm. for a year. But I think Rick's a great example.
Yeah, I think he was talking to John and Andy. Yeah.
Dr. John in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just got his brown belt, right?
Savage. MD.
Yeah.
Super highly educated. Probably just hit 70. I think he turned 70 this year.
He's pushing 70.
Late 60s. Savage.
Yeah.
And it's like, does he have to do a little more like stretching and rehab or like prehab, basically?
Of course.
Yeah. As all of us will have to do.
I do it. I mean, I'm like I said, I was talking to somebody at work and they were like, wait, so you're 41? I said, yeah. And they go, like, you just started jiu-jitsu. Like, how often do you go? I go about 4 days a week. And they go, and you lift? I said, yeah. They go, how often? I said, about 4 days a week. They go, so are you, and this is a 19-year-old kid. He goes, so are you just sore 24/7? I go, not that way. I said, I feel what I do. I said, but it's beneficial. Number one, number two, like, what's the opposite? Like, right. Or what's the alternative? I slowly creep into what happened to my parents, which is like by 50, they're on medication. By 60, they're in assisted living. By 70, they're dead.
So this is the physical manifestation of what I said about money. Like, you're going to pay now, you're going to pay later.
Exactly.
And you're going to have positive pain now. Like,
right.
Oh, man, like my shoulder's a little sore.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, my hips are a little sore because I did a hard workout.
Yeah.
Versus I can't get off the couch.
Yes.
Because like my lower back's fucked up. Like,
or you're 55 and you fell and now you have a broken hip.
All that stuff. Like you can invest and get it in a healthy way, or you can go downstream and get it in a catastrophic way. But it's way better to get it now and kind of manage it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's a coming up 2 hour mark, and that's a good one. I know you guys gotta go to Bozeman more, right?
People are stupid.
So yeah, he had to end with that. And you know what? I hijacked the last one.
No, it's good.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right, now it's over.
All right. Thanks, guys. All right.
That was legit.
That was fun.
It took
man.
Us a little time.